Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Thank you, Alec Webb. Welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 57. I am John Davis, at least the last time I looked. And sitting around our table here in Studio C is our head writer, Brian Robinson.
Hello.
Are you going to say anything?
Hello.
You just going to
just no. You just gave me a huge promotion, so I just wasn't sure what to say. But thank you very much.
Well, you know, I know we broke it to you gently. Over the edge reporter Stephen Chupnik.
Hey.
And our associate producer Ben Davis.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we've got a lot of ground, or I should say, wheels to cover for this podcast. So let's start off some green performance by Infiniti. We'll also take a look at Fiat's cute new convertible and two muscle cars, and maybe a surprise or two. Okay,
sweet
everybody, Infiniti M35H. We picked the M series as our luxury car pick for our Driver's Choice Awards. This is Infiniti's first full hybrid. What did we think?
I was pretty impressed with it. As you mentioned, we like the M already for it's comfortable. It handles really well. The interior is amazing. And this just gives you a lot more fuel economy.
Anything else, Ben?
Surly muscle on top of that. Yeah. You can drive spirited as I usually do anyway, and still get awesome miles per gallon in return. It's great.
What really knocked me out was that I don't remember any other full hybrid that we've driven where you could go 65, 70 miles an hour on the expressway and the gas engine shuts down. Now, they're probably all, because it's full hybrid, capable of that kind of performance, but this, the engine seemed to be off as much as it was on. As a matter of fact, Infiniti says that. You know, it's in there at 70 and the tach is zero. And this is, we're not talking about something like the Chevy Volt or anything else. Right. It's a V6 engine with an electric motor. Very impressive. And the fuel economy was that of a compact car. I mean,
tons
we did well into the 30s.
Yeah, and, and further in the point that you were making, you can, they say you can spend as much as half of your time in electric mode only. And I certainly noticed a lot more than usual. But along with that, it wasn't the smoothest transition from gas to electric power that some other hybrids
have.
A
little jolt.
Yeah, especially when you're saying you can be on the interstate at doing 65 and electric only, and then when the gas engine kicks on, you know, you definitely feel it.
Very luxurious, quite sporty, a nice car, and what was it, less than $60,000 to start? So I wouldn't, maybe not a bargain, but most people, but for that class of car with that much technology,
and pretty
cool.
And that much, somebody doesn't want to give up power, too.
Yeah. Steven?
Yeah, I thought, I mean, Infiniti in the past couple years to me has really impressed me in coming up you know, with a lot of technology, a lot of just, you know, future things that you don't see a lot.
Very advanced.
Very advanced. And even interior, exterior, the one thing that got me was kind of the body shape. It was a little odder than I had seen. The hood was a, you know, a bit
higher. Very long in the front, very kind of traditional muscle car, long in the front, short in the back. But you're right, from that class of car, it seemed unusual.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
But they make it work.
Yeah. But definitely.
Yeah, it's almost a European flair in there a little bit.
Okay, let's turn our attention towards the sky. Fiat 500, everybody knows. The little Fiat is taking the nation by storm. It's the first genuine Fiat that's come back in this country in decades. However, we just got in the Cabrio, the 500C, the open-top version of it. So let's go around the table. What'd you think of this little open-top wonder?
I felt very artsy in it. It's got a lot of flavor in a small package. I mean, with the top all the way back, it is perfect. I at first, I was worried you weren't going to get a very good top-down feeling.
Because you still have the door panels there.
Yeah, and you know, the header, the window, the A-pillars right in front of you. But, I mean, I was wrong. You can see plenty of sky in front of you, above you, to the side, behind you. And you still get, you know, the security of having glass all around you.
It is definitely a stretch calling it a convertible just because there's so much metal still left up there. But like you say, when you're driving it, you hardly even realize it.
Yeah.
It's as much as I hate to admit, it's a fun, cute little car. It's surprisingly fun.
You still got curtain bags up there, too, so it's...
I was amazed how many people stopped and stared.
That's what it is. I mean, people just turn and look. People don't see it. And that's the thing, not only now because it's a new, it's Fiat, but It's just an odd-looking car.
I mean, it's a perfect beach car. You know, if you wanted something to take to the coast and just sort of tool around in and not take a lot of space.
A historic waterfront community car like Venice, Annapolis, in our case.
Really, really cool little vehicle. On the downsides, when you put the top all the way back, it starts stacking up. It's like a Beetle convertible. It starts to block your rear vision a little bit. But if you didn't take it all the way back, you still had your rear window, and you still felt you were outside.
The backup cam would be nice for situations.
Backup cam would be very
like
nice. Very retro inside and out. It's pretty cool. All in all, I think if we were given thumbs up or thumbs down, I think it would be all thumbs up on it.
As much as I hate to do it, yeah.
Yeah, I would not for the tape package along the side that we noticed a little bit of imperfection
color combo,
in that.
Yeah,
it didn't quite line up.
No, it didn't quite line up, and the print didn't look like I printed it on my home computer.
Ooh, yeah. So skip the pinstripes. A car that leaves stripes on the pavement, Boss
nice
302. You like that?
Masterfully done.
Boss 302 Mustang, Ford's latest streetable and I think a realistic Mustang. Nothing against the Shelbys, but they've always sort of had their own spot. Okay, Ben, you're a Boss Mustang kind of guy. What'd you think?
I think this car is 100% dialed in. There's nothing gimmicky about this package at all. It's sorted out, and there was a lot of homework done on this car. It's my favorite car to date, regardless of price. You can boogie this thing down the track, and the shifter is so precise and fast, you never miss a shift. The clutch feels incredible with all that power going through it. 100% feedback on the clutch. Super easy to drive fast, whether it be straight line, track, and it sounds incredible.
The smoothest, most precise shifting, handling pony car I think I've ever driven.
Regardless how much power you're
putting through. I couldn't get
there.
Over it. It did not feel like a Mustang. I mean, everything was so tight.
Almost like a Miata on steroids.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with a much better sound. But definitely the shifter was the first thing I noticed as well.
Oh, what a nice shifter.
But it's only 30 couple more horsepower than the GT.
32, I think.
Yeah, but it's got a steeper rear end, so it feels a lot faster. It feels
Those
a lot
are
more.
Smart horsepowers.
I think it bodes well for what Ford is obviously doing on their quality control, too. I just don't remember this current generation Mustang, even though a couple that we had last year, feeling as secure as this car did.
It's a solid piece.
But this is definitely a car that, I mean, it's meant to be driven fast. It's not a commuter car.
But you don't have to. It doesn't beat you up.
No, you don't know. You don't have to, but it's definitely built for that. It's, I mean,
it'd be a shame not to put the pedal down
exactly,
once in a while.
Exactly.
Yeah. All the time.
All the time. Ben, while we've on you, you've just basically back from a trip
San
out
Fran.
West
yeah.
Where you got to drive the new Scion IQ. They're a little city car. Why don't you give us some of the highlights?
That's a really well-done car as well. I mean, if you're in the premium subcompact market, as of now, all you have is Smart. Maybe you can cross over into Fiat 500, but that's a little bigger than these cars. Anyway, this car, it's got a CVT trans from Toyota. They say it's the first time they've used the CVT, their CVT trans here in the U.S., and it's super smooth. Well, that's what they told me.
Yeah, doesn't the Prius have a CVT?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, maybe first non-hybrid application.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. First non-hybrid. I was driving it through buckled roads in San Fran over over rails and cobblestone stuff, and it's not as stiff like you would think a subcompact would be.
Because we're talking about a tall little car that doesn't have much space, and
really
there's not
narrow.
A lot of suspension travel.
Is it two-seater? Like, is Smart or is it four-seater?
Well, here's the cool thing there. They're billing it as a 3+1. So you can fit two full-size adults in the front. And the front passenger seat's kind of askew a little more towards the dash than the driver's seat. So there's plenty of room behind the passenger for a full-size adult as well. But the seat behind the driver is going to stay child small. There's nothing you can do about that.
It's kind of unique.
When is this going to go on sale?
It hits West Coast in October, and they're going to wrap it around through the on their way to the East Coast along the lower coast.
So warmer climates first.
Yeah.
Pretty cool addition.
Did you feel artistic in that, or what was the feel?
I didn't. I felt like I was in a compact car, not a subcompact, maybe even a midsize.
Wow.
Yeah, unless there was somebody sitting to my right and somebody behind that person. Then that person's
– Then they got a little claustrophobic.
Then the front passenger is a little in your lateral vision, but –
We've seen the IQ at auto shows for several years now, and Toyota's kind of – build an electrified version of it. So it's basically going to be a city car that we're probably going to see a lot of.
That it's everyday compliant, yeah. Even for the highway. There's nothing to worry about in this piece.
Speaking of, we were talking about the Boss Mustang a few minutes ago. We also had a couple of Camaros in, but these were special cars from the famed Callaway stable. Brian Robinson, bring us up to date on those.
We have the SC552 and 572 Camaros convertibles, which were similar to the Camaro coupes, just convertible versions. We had the 552 automatic, 572 manual, and in typical Callaway fashion, they're extremely fast, like a high 11s, 3.9, 0-60 fast, and fun.
You know, the thing I love about Callaway cars, in contrast to a lot of specialty manufacturers, is that their vehicles come out like they have really been carefully done. They don't just add, you know, blowers and bits and pieces, but everything seems to mate together very well. These cars also, like the Boss Mustang, felt extremely well put together, very glued down, and more car than you expected.
Yeah, and they have a lot of different options as far as how crazy you want to get with them. These were still pretty streetable, and really they have all kind of carbon fiber options. And
one of them even had the look-through hood, like
the peekaboo hood.
Yeah, peekaboo hood.
Power window hood, I guess they tend to
like
be called.
Like the Corvette.
But, yeah, it's cool. You get a chrome supercharger under there. You see that thing spinning through your hood.
Awesome. That's pretty cool, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our lightning round, where our Motor Week panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on the topics making headlines. We've got 2 minutes. Into that 2 minutes, our producer, Michelle Parker, will hit the bell. And here we go. Okay, 56 miles per gallon by 2025. That's what the White House is likely to order that cars and trucks do as their new fuel economy standards. Is it possible? Is it practical? Estimates run from 2,100 to 2,600 per car to do that, and a lot of people think those prices are very low. Do you think most Americans are going to pony up for a car that gets that kind of fuel economy?
Well, if they're saving, if they're getting twice the fuel economy what they're getting now, I mean, they're saving that much in fuel savings, so it's kind of a break even. But these numbers are just pulled out of the air. I mean, who knows what the numbers are actually be, but I'd spend $2,000 more on a car if I'm going to save $4,000 on fuel over the life of the car.
Would you spend $2,000 more on a car if you had to go from, say, a mid-sized car for your family into a compact or subcompact, which some critics say we'll have to do?
Probably, yeah, maybe not so much.
That's deep.
I guess the question is, it's not so much whether we can get there. Everybody seems to agree these numbers can be done. But will it result in vehicles Americans want to buy? And that's really the big bugaboo, is the government cannot force you to buy the car.
That's exactly what a lot of the Facebook people were saying. We kind of put this out there to Facebook and Twitter and our social media sites, and a lot of people responded with, "Let's wait until 2025 to see what it actually is, or even 2016 when it's supposed to be at 26 or 27."
Or 35.
They were saying that let's wait for another 4 years.
The problem is the industry can't wait. Right. And I think here's some givens. Almost every vehicle will have some kind of electrification. It'll either be a hybrid, full electric, or have at least minimum electric stop start. We're going to see that pretty much sooner. It'll have a lot of lightweight materials, aircraft style aluminum. That costs money. So they're out. Some estimates are these cars could cost $5,000 more. But I'm not too worried about that because actually by then cars will probably cost $5,000 more anyway. I think nobody knows. But it's not likely that no matter what they say that standard's going to stand for the next 15 years without it being challenged.
Just because it's not possible or practical doesn't mean the government won't mandate it.
Well, no. They did originally when they did the original CAFE, and everybody in the country fought about it for 25 years. Yeah. The interesting thing right now is California might propose actually a lower number than the feds, which would be pretty interesting. That's never happened before. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Let's move into our Motor Week mailbag. This question comes from James. What do you think of the new Ford F-150 with the EcoBoost V6 twin turbo?
You have to do that again, but make sure you put the y'all in there.
Y'all. Thank you.
Thank you. Much better.
You did say y'all. Thank you. He's from the South like I am. Anyway, James, let's go around the table. Something like over half, I think, of the sales of the new F-150 have this six-cylinder twin-turbo option, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, they can't keep them in the dealerships.
And it delivers good fuel economy. It has good towing. What about longevity? Do you think people are going to be happy? I mean, pickup trucks, people keep them forever.
Yeah, I think Ford's got a pretty good reputation on longevity in their gas-powered trucks. They've got that going for them.
Yeah, they've had the EcoBoost stuff on the road for a while now with the Taurus SHO and different cars. It remains to be seen. I mean, they got so many electronics in these things now. They can keep the engines running in a nice, comfortable, safe range.
And turbos aren't as difficult to deal with as they used to be.
No.
I think the reputation of the EcoBoost and Ford is definitely – I mean, some people are going to buy it.
You know, they've got that this year along with putting the 5.0 Mustang V8 in the F-150. So they've got two very, very interesting engine choices.
Yeah, I'm sure they did their homework before they,
I'm sure they
took
did
a
too.
Risk with the F-150.
So James hopes to answer your question. I think if you're going to be using your light-duty pickup as a combination car or work vehicle, the EcoBoost makes a lot of sense and it gets good mileage. Okay, that brings to a close this Motor Week podcast. It's number 57 for anyone keeping score. I want to give a big thanks to everybody around the table today, Steve Chupnik, Ben Davis, Brian Robinson, also to our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and to our producer, Michelle Parker. Ding, 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 ding. There's, you know, no dead air, Michelle, please. Thank you very
That's
much for
job.
Joining us. Be sure to catch Motor Week on your local public television station and also on HD Theater. I'm John Davis for all of us at Motor Week. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.